Jack Garfein survived 11 German concentration camps before he immigrated to America as a teenager. He was able to work his way into the New York City Actors Studio, studying with the likes of Lee Strasberg and Ilya Kazan, and he has since taught acting all over the world, also directed two feature films. Film Forum is honoring him this coming Sunday and Monday with a tribute to Jack Garfein. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Didn't you come to this country alone? Had any members of your family survived?
No. On the Garfein side, I'm the only survivor. I'm the only one that came back. A few of them hid or lived with the Christian papers. But those of us that were taken in, there were about 60 members of my family. I'm the only one that came back.
And how old were you when you got here?
Well, when I got to Auschwitz, you mean?
No, when you came to the U.S.
I was 15.
And when you went to Auschwitz?
13.
So 2 years in the camps.
No, because I was liberated when I was 14. I was about 13 months in the camp. Before that, I was in a ghetto.
Did you have any relatives in the U.S.? Is that one of the reasons?
Yes, I had an uncle in New York who brought me out, but actually Hias paid the way, you know.
The Jewish organization.
Yeah, yeah. And, but the beginnings were not too great here.
Well, you didn't speak English.
Well, what happened was that, the day I arrived, Leonard, right, was a huge storm. So I wanted to see the Statue of Liberty. I was among the first five that came to this country. We came on a freighter, you know. So we had to go to Baltimore. So I went to Baltimore, and at that point, there was a little desk with two customs guys there, right? And the guy said to me, "What's your name?" You know, and I said, "Jakob Garfein." He told me, "Write it down." And he said, "Where do you live?" I said, "1, 2, 7, Riverside Drive." He said, "Oh, boy, just write that." So he said, "Jack Garfein, Riverside Drive, change my name." Right there, right? So I got on a bus, and, you know, I was a kid, and I was very excited about the United States, and I ran to the back of the bus because I wanted to see from the back the sit. When the driver suddenly starts yelling, and the guy from Hias comes over to me and says, no, you can't be there. Only black people at that time, they said, Negro, you have to sit here. I said to myself, I just went through Auschwitz, Bergen-Belsen. I said, what? And I kept looking, and I apologized to the people in the back. And the guy said, no, just sit there. You know, that was my first day, okay, in the United States. But afterwards, I became the UJA child, and they wanted to pay me for speaking. I wouldn't accept it because I said, no. They made announcements. Don't make checks payable to Jack Garfein. Make them payable to the United Jewish Appeal. But so my uncle got very upset that I wouldn't take any money. So I was sent to a foster home.
Well, you already had aspirations to become an actor, hadn't you? When you were growing up in Czechoslovakia, tried your hand at acting?
Yeah. I what?
Had you already... You wanted to be an actor and in Czechoslovakia?
Oh, well, my father was one. He was like a, you know, he prepared me and my sister always. We won the prizes, poetry, drama, but I always overacted, you know. I remember we did a poem and I'd say, the snow on the trees, the wind. And my father would say, please, Jan, just see the trees, don't push. So I pleased him, you know, during rehearsals. But then when the performance came, Leonard, I got up and I said, "The wind through the trees, the wind!" And everybody thought I was the actor. My sister, who listened to my father, who was very natural, they said, "Oh, well, she's just like a normal human being. But you, Jack, you are really the actor."
So when you came here, did you still aspire to be an actor? You didn't speak English. You had a thick accent even when you learned.
They thought I was crazy. They thought I was mad, you know. But you know what happened? When I was in Sweden, they did a kind of a spectacle about the camps. And I was cast as a little boy who takes care of the capo's shoes. And at one point, the capo wasn't rehearsed in the show, threw a cigarette. and a cigarette in the camps, you could buy the Empire State Building. For
everybody
that.
Leaped on it.
Right. So I
leapt on it.
So at that moment, it became so real to me that I used my foot while I was shining his shoes to get the butt over to the other one, stuck it in my shoe, and then left. And then when I came out, the audience yelled, "Bravo!" And they ruined my life, you know.
Because then you wanted to do it for the rest
yeah,
of your
and
life.
Then when I came, I
you studied with Irwin Piscator here,
yeah,
didn't you?
But even before that, I was at the John Adams High School, and I had never read Shakespeare, and I got very excited. And there was a teacher called Miss Bennett. I said, "Who wrote this? Mm-hmm. This person really knows the truth about life." And she said to me, "Hey, you have to be in the theater." I said, "But I have an accent. Everybody tells me I'm crazy." No. You got to be in the theater. That's how it started.
Well, you did study with Piscator, who's an Piscator. He was an emigre theater, an emigre. So, was there an emigre theater community?
Yeah. Well,
and Piscator was Brechtian. That's a style that probably would have appreciated your earlier approach.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure, Leonard, because the thing about Piscator, it's true. It was epic theater, but even though he was not very specific about acting, he was amazing about the sense of truth in a play and what a character represented, you know. But the actors were usually, because he didn't work with professional actors, but the productions were extraordinary, technically what he did. But they were usually, I would say, types rather than human beings, because the idea was of that kind of a theater, yeah.
So how did you wind up at the Actor's Studio? Were you looking for a different approach?
Well, what happened, Leonard, was I was in a play, and I got all the press. I got very good reviews, and Rod Steiger, who's in my class, told Piscator, "You've got to go to see this kid in this play." Piscator comes to a matinee. He looks. He comes into my dressing room, and he says, "Nah, Garfein, you come to see me tomorrow." So I can imagine. I didn't sleep that night. The next morning, I was walking around. I hoped for the best, that he would ask me to do a play or something. I come to see him the next day, and he said to me, "Well, Jack," he said, "what you do on the stage, I know they praised you, but what I see on the stage is not an actor. I see a director. And as an actor, you'd have to start all over again." I said, "What do you mean, Mr. Piscator?" He said, "What I mean is, I see when you're on the stage, you sense when things are not working and you keep doing all sorts of things to make the things interesting. The actor has to be a character who's living the life of a character. So I think you must take a directing class." And I said, you can imagine, I went to my acting teacher. I was thinking, what form should my suicide take, you know?
You did not want to be a director.
Yeah, right. Oh, I thought directors were failed actors. So then I went to Strasberg's class, okay? And I refused to do anything. It was like I sat in the back, and a director came along and cast me in the part of the blind prophet in Oedipus, okay? And then he did. I said, acting, fine. Directing, no. So I got up. When I did the scene, Strasberg said at the end, pointing to me, "Who told him what to do?" And he said, I didn't tell him. He did everything himself. He said, "Well, that was the only directing touch in the entire scene. What I did was, because I was blind, I came on. I didn't know where the audience was. I kept groping my way," and he felt that was the only directing touch. So that's how I...
Well, at the Actor's Studio was Ilya Kazan, who yeah. was one of the greatest directors that ever yeah. lived, and you gravitated toward him?
Oh, yes. I owe a lot to Kazan, but also his articulation of the work. But, you know, my first film, after I did a production of End is a Man with all young actors, because the experienced actors would have nothing to do with me. I was, you know, all of 22 when I did that, you know. So so I went to the new actors in the studio, Ben Gazzara, James Dean, Pat Engel, and they all agreed. We all had jobs, you know. I was a package boy at the Hotel Beacon. So what we would do is we would meet at night and work at night. So,
did you know that you had, that these were among the most talented actors we'd ever have?
Well, Leonard, all I knew is that they were right for the play, and I wanted to work with them. You know, well, apropos of what you said, so we rehearsed until 2 or 3 in the morning because we had jobs. One night, about 1 o'clock in the morning, we hear footsteps coming up on a. We said, Pat Hengel was the last one. He said, you left the door open. Now, New York was not as dangerous as it was later, but still, 1 o'clock in the morning. James Dean grabbed a chair. Ben Gazzara grabbed another chair on either side of the door. The footsteps approached. The door opened. Ilya Kazan walked in. He said, I walked down Broadway. I saw the light. I said, what's going on here? And I came in. And I explained to him that I was a director, introduced him to the actors. That's the first time he met James Dean. I introduced him to the actors. And he looked at us and he said, you guys are walking up 7 flights of stairs. And you rehearse until 3 o'clock in the morning. Every one of you is going to make a contribution to this art.
You wound up also doing a little TV directing. And then you... You wound up directing Something Wild, which starred Carol Baker, who you were married to at the time. That must have been odd, directing your own wife.
Yeah, well, it's hard, but there is something exciting as well. I mean, some of the greatest couples in the theater, like take Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontaine, in a sense that you can really communicate as long as you – well, I'll tell you a funny story. When she was doing Baby Doll, okay, I was on the set.
For Kazan.
Yeah, for Kazan. And I was on the set. And Tennessee Williams, she was doing the seduction scene on the swing scene with Eli Wallach. And Tennessee Williams was standing behind me. And I was watching the scene. And he said to me, how do you feel, Jack Garfine? How do you feel? I said, Tennessee, listen, I am very happy that she's acting well, that the scene, that she does what the scene requires. You're such a liar, Jack Garfine. You're such a liar. Because it's true, of course. There's always that element.
And there often are affairs that result from people going off and working together and having love scenes. You get rather close. I don't know how much you encourage the actors that you teach to get into those kinds of scenes.
Well, Leonard, there's a misunderstanding, and I think my book on acting makes that clear.
Called Acting in Life, which is also a memoir.
Life and Acting,
Life and Acting.
Yeah, and Leonard, that's what I hope the book clarifies. First, Leonard, comes life, okay? Now, in all the other arts, they have understood. You work with paint, you work with materials, but when it comes to acting, okay, there's been a terrible misunderstanding, which is you do this exercise. Imagine if you told a pianist, oh, you got to work psychologically, a psychological exercise in order to play the piano. Oh, you got to do this. Oh, what's remarkable about this work is the fact that the material exists in life, it's nothing to do with acting. It's a necessity of nature, meaning we experience emotions in life on two different levels. You don't have to be an actor. Remembered emotion? I mean, Leonard, you're at home. You hear a sound, and it's a threatening sound. What do? You take steps to protect yourself. Then you find out an object fell over, okay? And then you're fine. Now, the remembered emotion, the sound brought back a feeling of danger, okay? Pushkin, when he saw a play about parricide, and then after the play he saw the two actors in a bar laughing, and he said he just killed his father. Well, but it's not to do with acting, meaning it's not pretending, it's not playing, it's an art form, which means the material, the example I just gave you, is what they use. Meaning everybody experiences it. Everybody experiences remembered emotion.
Now, Jack,
remember, incident. The emotion comes by itself.
The Film Forum is screening the two films you directed, Something Wild, The Strange One, also another film called A Journey Back. I don't know if we have enough time. But your films were very well received, and yet you didn't direct anymore. Were you blacklisted?
Well, a form of blacklist. I mean, George Stevens said to me, I was on the golf course blacklist, meaning what happened was in the first film, The Strange One, I at the end of the film, I wanted the blacks in the film. And so the studio and the producer didn't want the – at first they said –
They didn't want black actors in the film?
No, because they felt distribution. So after I shot the scene, they wanted me to cut. And I said, you're asking an Auschwitz survivor to cut blacks out of a movie? Well, they canceled my contract because, you know, I wouldn't – it was a form of bullying and, you know, I've been bullied and by bigger people.
So you wound up teaching acting and acting a bit more. And the third film, by the way, is a journey.
No, what was great is I turned to the theater. I worked with Samuel Beckett. I worked with Arthur Miller. I mean, it was a great experience for me.
Jack Garfein will be signing books tonight at 5:30 at the Drama Bookshop on West 40th Street between 7th and 8th Avenues. And he'll be speaking with Annette Insdorf at Film Forum on Sunday at 3:15, as well as doing a Q&A on Monday following the screening of The Strange One at 6:30. Plus, he'll introduce Something Wild on Monday at 9:15. For more information and to buy tickets, go to our show page at WNYC.org. And congratulations for the tribute at the Film Forum.
Oh, thank you.
And great thanks to you for coming on our show, Jack Garfein.
Thank you for inviting me, Lou.